Welcome to A Typical Man's Podcast, joined by yours truly, Ace Estrada, joined by my co-host, Houston Good. Last week, we talked about Junie's upbringing, how he came from the streets to pretty much changing his whole life around to now. In this episode, he'll be talking about his experiences as a cop, just working in Baltimore, being a detective, moving on up. There's some of the experiences he's had to go do with on this episode. So I hope you enjoy. So Junie, before we came on air, you had mentioned like some of the craziest stories as a police officer and detective, like really crazy stories. So I was just curious, like what is, if you could just tell a couple of them really quick for our audience to hear, like what's the craziest scenario or craziest situation in your career that you ever been a part of?
Wow. I mean, there's a lot of them. There was one, it was summertime, maybe back, it was before I got promoted. So maybe it was maybe 2011-12. And we got a call for a dirt bike, just raining hell in the neighborhood. On the dude was on his dirt bike, just going crazy on his dirt bike. So the squad is going after him. The helicopter's up. We're chasing him or following him, whatever you want to call it. But he had to be stopped because he was just doing too much extra stuff. You know what I'm saying? Usually back then we didn't really go too hard on the dirt bike guys. Because, you know, the ends didn't justify the means. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What they want to do is they want to have fun, ride through the neighborhood. Sometimes, you know, it's fun for them, for us to chase them. And it's fun for us to chase them. So we're both having fun on both our ends. And we notice because we do talk to them, you know, when they're out, you know, chilling in the park. You know, some cops are cool enough to be able to talk to those guys without, you know, being an asshole and wanting to arrest a dude because he's sitting on the bike, you know? So I've talked to him before, and a couple of my friends talked to him before, and, you know, we laugh and joke about, you know, the chasing and all that stuff. You know, it's cat and mouse, as always. So this particular day, this dude's on his dirt bike, and we're on the west side of Baltimore. And he's just up and down North Avenue in Pennsylvania and just flying, doing wheelies. So he ended up going through one of the projects in the area. I don't know if it was a Gilmore Homes or what. But he ended up hitting this girl. And what made it bad for this dude, and the reason why we were going so hard for him, is because he was on the sidewalks. And it was summertime. And there's a lot of people in Baltimore on the west side in the summertime. A lot of people. So and this guy's just going through there like it's all good. You know, driving through the neighborhood. I mean, through the sidewalk, you know, dodging people like they're cones, you know, in some kind of, you know, X Games or whatever. So I get eyes on him, and I have him on North Avenue. So I'm riding with him. He's riding next to me. He'll dodge between the car and then come back towards me. And we're riding straight down North Avenue. And I get to a point where I'm able to, like, block and make him slow down to make him turn down this tight alley. So that, you know, because we had other guys on the other side, you know, because you cannot run the radio. That's the whole thing with a police chase. You cannot run the radio or the helicopter. So I ended up making him make this turn into the alley. When I made him make the turn into the alley, I turned my patrol car into the alley. He ended up wiping out, right? So he wiped out my car. I think when he wiped out my car, it hit the back of his tire or something like that. I ran over his bike, but he was already off the bike by then. And I guess because there was some debris in the alley where he just, you know, whatever. I didn't even see it. So he ended up on the floor. He's screaming. So I'm wondering why he didn't get up and start running. You know, and so I get out the car quick. Here comes the other guys coming from the other end of the alley. And he's laying on the floor screaming. So I get close. And this dude had a compound fracture on his leg. That bone was sticking right out of his body. I said, damn. So I'm looking at him. He's yelling at me because he needs an ambulance. And this and that, and the people that were right around where he just, made that turn, they come running into the alley, they're looking. And I don't think we had cell phones back then, but I don't think people were so quick to take out their cell phones back then. I can't remember. I do remember that it was a problem with cell phones. Everybody was wanting to record things, but I think this particular day didn't. I think they knew he might have been a problem, because I think the word spread that he hit this girl with his bike who was holding a baby, and that was the reason why we were going after this one idiot on a dirt bike. But he, I don't know what happened to the baby, but it was a newborn that this girl was holding, and he hit him. No regard, no regard for anybody.
Did she die?
No, the little girl, no, we didn't get, no. She definitely didn't die, but this dude, I think, was on parole for murder or homicide. In Baltimore City, you could be on parole for attempted murder or homicide and stuff like that. You could be
Right.
on parole, or out on bail, actually. You could be out on bail for homicide. It's because people don't talk when these homicides happen, so these guys are able to be let loose. Same thing with gun charges. It's not like New York, where I'm originally from. You get a handgun charge, you're going to jail. I mean, I remember growing up in New York where if you got caught with a gun, it was said it was a year for each bullet. So we knew that growing up. If you carry a gun, that's your ass. Every bullet in that gun, you know what to expect. And Baltimore is different. It's just, and to this day, 2022, it's still different. I mean, it's still the same. You got a gun, it's whatever. It's there's no serious penalties for the crimes that happen in a city, and that's why the crime is so bad right now. But that was one that was fun. It was fun. It was fun for me. It ended up not being fun for him at the end, but it was fun for him while it was going on. He just got the shit under the stick on that one. I mean, we had times where we were chasing. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me not say chase. We were following dirt bikes, and it was fine back then. It was because it was part of a unit. There was a dirt bike unit, so we were with the unit that day. So what we were doing was okay because they were there. So we had and Baltimore City for years tries to find out how to corral these guys, and like what they want to do is they want to throw a net on the whole crew. And it's a lot of them when it's a
What do
nice
you
day.
mean throw a net on the whole crew? What do you mean by that?
Well, they've been trying to figure out how they wanted to get these dirt bikes off the street because they're a menace. When they're riding around, they have cars that ride with them that record them, and they ride as reckless as the bikes do. But you got to understand that they're in the car. The bikes can go in between cars. These cars try to do the same thing the bikes do. Sometimes it causes accidents. It's dangerous for the guys. They hang out the cars. When they're riding through, they're going like 60, 70, 80 miles an hour on a small highway. And they're out the sunroofs, out the windows with the cameras, and they're following the dirt bike guy. So that makes it all dangerous for everybody, because if the guy falls out the car and this person runs him over, then it's not as easy as, okay, I ran this kid over. I mean, it's a big deal to kill somebody by accident, especially somebody that's just having fun, because to them it's fun. They're having fun riding through the city, riding their dirt bikes and recording it. You know what I'm saying?
But
And I
what is it
understand.
like younger dudes or what is it like younger people
Oh
or?
no, this older. It goes from the young teen. If you're, and this is for every city. Every city has their dirt
Yeah,
bike crew. You know what I'm
right.
saying? New York has theirs too. If you're big enough to ride a dirt bike, you're in the crew. You're riding with them. Don't matter what race you are, what age you are, what gender you are. If you got a bike and you can ride, come on and join in. And that's how they do through the city, and it'll be hundreds of them sometimes. I mean, it's a sight to see. It's cool to see. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of cops forget that, that it's fun growing up. Like it's fun to do these things. A lot of cops didn't grow up this way. You know what I'm saying? I kind of grew up there. I didn't grow up, I grew up having fun. And sometimes doing bad things was fun. You know what I'm
Right.
saying? Sometimes doing unsafe things was fun. And I understood that, and I still to this day understand it. You know what I'm saying? But a lot of the cops are too square to understand it. So when you're too square to understand it, you take it too serious, and it's like do or die. This bike got to go, and he got to go, and that's it. And then, when it comes to that point, sometimes it's like just chill out, bro. Like it's not that serious, because you end up taking it so serious that It makes the situation worse.
Mm.
Especially when you catch the guy. You're taking it too personal. Can't take the shit personal. He's just riding his bike. It's fun sticking your middle finger up at the cops going by. You know what I'm saying? You don't get mad. You smile. You're going to see the dude again. If you're a good cop, you're going to see him again. Because you know you guys in your neighborhood. You know the dirt bike guys. You know them. So you see him tomorrow, you give him a ticket or arrest him for, whatever charge you can get him for from the day before. Riding a dirt bike is illegal. You can give him a ticket for it. You can arrest him for that. You can get a warrant for it for that person if you know him. You know what I'm saying? So there's other ways. There's many ways to skin a cat. You know what I'm saying? But sometimes these dudes is one way thinking. I'm talking about the cops. A one way thinking. We just got to think differently than them.
Speaking of cops going that route, right? Do you know of any cops that you've ever dealt with? Well, you don't mention it by name, obviously, but was there an experience where the cop could have laid off some people and he kind of like was too uptight, or it escalated to a situation that it didn't need to get into?
Well, we had one dude, black guy, and anytime we were in a drug unit at this time, right?
Okay.
And anytime we came across a white drug addict, he would coddle them. It's okay, it's all right. He'll put his arm around them and walk with them and talk with them and stuff like that. It'll be okay. We can get you some help and this and that. And he's talking regular to them. And I'm like, okay. Then a lot of us started to see that when he ran into the black drug addicts, this dude used 26 letter words to describe one thing. And we're sitting there watching this dude like, yo, what are you saying? Like, we don't even know what you're talking about. And and we work together. Like, why are you saying these big words to these kids that don't know what you're talking about? You know what I'm saying? Why are you talking to them mean? Why are you being so short with them? And we noticed that it was a thing with him. Now we noticed it and we talked about it and we said in front of him as well. Because none about and I'm telling you, nobody in my squad, and when I say my squad, I mean just like they would say their squad if they were telling the story. Nobody in our squad was scared to open their mouth. All right. So we all said whatever we had to say. And this goes, I'm sure, for other squads in America. You know what I'm saying? If you're a squad, they put a squad together because you guys are tough and you're not scared to open your mouth, you're not scared to speak your mind. So they try to put those people in the squad together. It's all alpha males in here. You know what I'm saying? So we told him like, yo, why you do that? Why you coddling the whites and then with the blacks you act all stupid with them? So, of course, his justification was nonsense, So we just it was what it was. At this point, it was just verbal stuff. It was nothing ever physical. It was stuff that you can brush off that, might have happened to us when we were growing up. No harm, no foul. It was just him being an asshole, right? It didn't affect the way they were treated as far as being arrested or let go or whatever it was, right? So, I mean, one time I seen him, we were at some kind of festival, and we were working a festival. It was like at the racetrack, and man, he was talking to these white ladies. Because he loves white, he likes white ladies, and he speaks like a valley dude. You know what I'm saying? From
Yeah.
from California and stuff, right? So he doesn't speak like we do, like us guys who grew up in the neighborhood. He didn't speak like that. He spoke differently. So that was more his he. Get over to more like his people, and he went to it's whatever. So he was over there with the white ladies talking to them, and I was sitting there and I was smiling. I'm just watching him talking to these ladies, and he was so happy talking to them, and they were smiling and joking and stuff like that because he was in uniform and everything. Women like men in uniform, so he was taking advantage of that, talking to them and everything. And then here come some some black ladies. He didn't give him a second look, man. And they were pretty too. He didn't give him a second look. And we used to play with him too. We used to mess with him and show him pictures of like, Halle Berry and then Celie Strong, however you say her name, right? They're both beautiful women. He's always going for the white lady, which is fine. You know what I'm saying? But it was the way he acted with the people on the street that was the problem. you know. But
you think he had a chip on his shoulder? Because I hear like stories with police officers or cops that they. So this is the common thing I hear, Junie, and maybe if you could correct this if I'm wrong. So, like, there's notion that a lot of them were in the military and they didn't make it far in the military. So because of that, there's like a resentment towards that, and they go for like the force or the police academy. It's almost like they settle for it. Not again, this is not something I'm saying, but this is just something that people have told me from being in the force. What do you take from that statement? Like,
I've never worked with anybody that it's, first of all, he did have a chip on his shoulder. He thought he was better than everybody else because he felt he was smarter. But you got to understand that in police work, you know, it has nothing to do with smarts. The police work is all common sense, your physical abilities.
And street, you know, smarts. Street smarts.
And street smarts. Right. You know what I'm saying? That you being book smart in the street, and especially a tough street like Baltimore, New York, Chicago, Detroit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's not going to get you really anywhere. Nope. You got to have something else, because the book smarts are going to get you smacked in your face. It's going to get you beat up. You know what I'm saying? Either you become too complacent, you know, you're too nice, or you think you know everything. Either one of those things will get you hurt. You know what I'm saying? But the thing with him was that he was book smart and he knew how to fight, because I've had fights with him with suspects, right? So he'll get it in. He wasn't a sucker, which was a great thing, because you don't want to have a sucker as a partner. That's just not going to work. You know, he was smart and he knew how to fight. You know, the common sense, he didn't have it, because usually people that are super smart don't have common sense. It's just like it eludes them. And that's why it's good to have an eclectic bunch of friends, you know, that you can, you know, hit off of. But, you know, he was, you know, while we're looking at TV or whatever, he's reading a book. You know, he had a baby, beautiful little girl. He didn't let her watch TV at all. It was all books, which is fine. But, you know, you have to mix it up when you have kids. You can't just, because you're that way, you can't just have your kid read a book all day and there's no interaction, because they end up being a sheltered child or scared of human interaction. You know what I'm saying? So he misses a lot of things because he thinks he's so smart and he's smarter than everybody else. But, you know, he's doing well over there. I think he's over there teaching in the academy now.
Oh, see, it's usually either you think you're too smart or you're too tough. Because a lot of people give the cops notion too that, oh, they think they're the toughest guys on earth too. So what would you say to that? Like, do you deal a lot with that? Like a lot of macho-ness, a lot of privado, like do you deal with a lot of that egotistical people in the force?
Yeah. Well, you know, again, being in the squad, when they build a squad is with a bunch of alpha males, right? And then you're dealing with a bunch of alpha males in the street, you know. Well, majority of them are alpha males, right? But when you get a cop that acts too tough, the people in the street see that. And if you're tough, you don't act like you're tough. Real tough guys don't act like they're tough. You know, they act normal until the time comes, and then they show you that they're tough. You know what I'm saying? So anytime somebody tells you they're tough or they're doing tough things, you know, or you're hanging with a guy, as he said, I'm going to punch him out, I'm going to knock him out, that's nonsense. Like, you don't even want to be a partner with a guy that does that, because first of all, he can get you in trouble. Okay? Second, he'll get you hurt. Okay? So there's been many stories. I've never come across it because I didn't gravitate towards that. But there's stories where there's been tough guys in the department, in Baltimore Police Department. This is back in the day, that took so much shit, right? And so abusive towards the citizens, whether it be drug dealers or not, it didn't matter. Like, you know, you don't abuse them just because they're selling drugs. There's going to be drug dealers in the world. There's been since before you were a cop, there's gonna be drug dealers after. Same thing with prostitution. Before and
Right.
after you. But you dead and gone. Okay? So you treat everybody the same, you're gonna be fine. This dude did not do that. So one time they made a false call and they called him in, they called him in one of the project buildings, right? They beat him. He went by himself because he saw he swear he was so tough. He went into the building and they beat the shit out of him so bad they put him in the hospital. And I think he didn't last too much longer after that in the police department. Because when you get beat like that by the neighborhood, what are you gonna go back to? You can't recover from that and come back to the neighborhood and patrol it because
No.
you lose all your gusto, you lose your power. Your power's gone.
Yeah, how long was he a cop for?
I'm not sure because when you come on to the department, they tell you these stories. The old timer tell you stories of their time, and this is one of their stories that they had told me. I don't think he had long on because they don't let you go too long into your career with that bullshit. But you get corrected. You come on with the tough man stuff, you get corrected quick. And you're told it's like when they say when you go to jail, you can't go into jail acting like you're tough. You'll get beat up, raped, stabbed in a heartbeat. You gotta be cool. You go in there and be cool, chill. There's rules to this shit. It's like
Right.
there's rules to the jail thing and there's rules to the street thing. Just because you're a cop doesn't mean that you're Superman and you bullets bounce off you. You can't get stabbed, you can't get punched in the face. Nah, bro. The only reason that separates you from them is that badge and they don't want to go to jail, so that's why they don't punch you in your face when you say something sideways to them. That's the only thing. Because if you're not wearing that badge, you would not go to the neighborhood and say that to them. You wouldn't talk to them like that in the mall if you didn't have a uniform on. For some cops. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about for the tough guys. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You're not gonna say what you're looking at to the same dude that you see in the mall to when you're wearing your uniform. Because he's gonna beat your ass up.
What was I going to say? You ever thought about being undercover? Like, have you ever done undercover work, or if not, thought about doing it?
I did undercover work. It was unofficial cover work. But I've done it. My friends have done real undercover work, like Vice, stuff, which is the real scary type of stuff. I have two friends that do it now. Well, one friend did it. He's a detective now. He was a detective. He's a different type of detective now. I think my other friend still does it. Both too dangerous. One of the two of the dangerous jobs in the department.
Oh, I could imagine.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so I've done it to where I put on a hoodie. Cause it's the thing, right? When you're selling drugs, you don't really pay attention like that when because there's so much going on. You're waiting for your customers. You're waiting for this guy to give you a signal that that person's coming to get the drugs. So hand it off, blah blah blah, right? So I've walked in the mix of these dudes selling drugs with with just a jacket over my top. I think I was wearing a vest though. I was plain clothes. But you had these rules to it, you know what I'm saying? So you had to kind of, go around the rules a little bit. So I had to have my vest on, but I put my jacket over my vest. And I walked right into the store where they were selling drugs and they offered me drugs. You know what I'm saying? And I walked in there just eating some Skittles, whatever, just, la-di-da. And they should have known who I was because I'm always around there. But again, they don't pay attention. They're so into their own world,
Right.
and it's there, there's a lot of other things they got to be looking at besides police because they're looking for the uniform. That's the whole thing. They're looking for the car and the uniform. So when they don't see that, they get laxed. Now they start to worry about other things, the stick-up boys, customers. So I walk right in there, the dude offered me drugs. I have the guys in my ear, right? I'm talking to them on the phone so they can hear the guy offer me drugs. So when I walked out, I just gave them the guy's clothing description, and they went back in there and they got the guy with the drugs. And I came out. I said, "Yo, how you ain't see me walk right in front of you, bro?" He's like, "I wasn't paying attention, man. I'm just trying to make these sales." I'm like, "All right, you'll be out of here. You'll be out in a couple of hours anyway." Because they used to let them loose within a couple of hours, depending if, unless they had something else on their record. But it was all petty. It was all petty stuff. It was nothing. The serious stuff didn't get until later on. So these little drug lockups. They're basically all petty lockups, you know, just to get them off the street, just to get the street quiet, to avoid a homicide. Because a lot of times, the homicide victims are these guys in the stores. A lot of people say, "Why are you making these lockups? Well, why are you making these petty lockups? You're locking me up, you petty, this and that." I've locked up so many people where, and it, I've locked up guys where I prolong their death. So when I say that, I locked a guy up one time, off a drug charge, and he was in jail for 2, 3 days. As soon as he came out of jail, he got murdered. And you get a lot of those stories with a lot of drug cops. I locked the dude up, he gets out, he gets murdered. So we figured that, yo, this is, we're prolonging these guys' lives just for a couple of days. You know what I'm saying? So everybody says, yo, why are you locking them up off a little bit of drugs, this and that? Because these little drugs get you killed. Because you might not be allowed to be here by the other drug guys. You know what I'm saying? You might not supposed to be on this block or in this store. So when the guy says you can't sell here, or if a new guy comes in and says you can't sell here no more, he gives you one warning. The second one's gonna be with a bullet. You know what I'm saying? And this is all facts. You know what I'm saying? He's not gonna warn you again. Because if he warns you again, he's a sucker now at this point. Like, yeah, you told me twice already. You ain't gonna say, you ain't saying nothing. It's one warning. Second one, I'm coming through with the gun. You know what I'm saying?
Did you have to, like, was that a way, like the petty arrest, was that a way to get him to be informants on like the bigger drug dealers, like the big fish, as they say, or
Well, sometimes you knew. We always asked everybody because you got to debrief them, right?
right.
So you interview them and you talk to them and you ask them what they know. Sometimes they offer the information up because they might have a charge on them, right? And if we know somebody has a charge or is on probation or whatever, we'll target that person. You know what I'm saying? Because they're selling drugs. So if we lock them up, they might give us something. They didn't give us something the first time, but they might give us something the second time because now they have time that they're backing. Okay? So if they get locked up again, they're going to jail to finish their remaining years or whatever it may be if they're out on parole. Right? So for somebody we first come across and we take and we arrest them for drugs, we'll talk to them and ask them, you know, where you get the drugs from. We always try to get as much information as possible. You know, trying to get you to snitch on whoever the hell it is you're working for. Because it goes from him getting the drugs from the guy. Then the guy getting the drugs from the supplier, and then so on and so on, and you just go up the ladder, okay? So yeah, a lot of times what we do is we do that because you want to get the main guy because the main guy is bringing the drugs and supplying the whole block. You know what I'm saying? So we want to get that guy, but of course, you know, it never ends. Once we have put him down, somebody else pops up, but that's the game. That's policing. It will never stop. The drugs, the shipments will always be coming in. On boat, by car, nonstop. But yeah, that was some of the reasons why I mean, that was just one of the reasons. The main reason is get them off the damn block to stop this, try to at least clean up a block. You know what I'm saying? And we've done it, you know what I'm saying? But if you're not consistent, that's it, man. If you're not consistent with your drug work, your police work, if you plan to do, like, take one block down, and keep it shut down and nice and beautiful for the people who are paying taxes who live here. If you're not consistent with it, it'll go right back to normal, just like anything else, you know. So it's a never ending fight.
Did the inform how easy was it to have the people, like, once you locked them up, to turn on, you know, to turn on their friends or associates in the streets? Like, how easy was it to make them turn?
It's not hard at all. Sometimes, shit, they'll give you the informant packet. Then the kid signed already. It's signed already. There you go. Put me on, coach. You know, put me in, coach. So they it's rare, bro. If a dude is not backing anything and he has nothing to, like, we have nothing to bargain with, he's not gonna say nothing. Majority of the time he's like, nah, just lock me up. I know I'll be out. If he's a seasoned dude, the seasoned dude without backing any time is gonna tell you to go fuck yourself. He's down. I ain't snitching. I'm good. You know what I'm saying? And then he does that, and okay, boom. He'll just go in. He'll go in for the amount of drugs that we got him with and not be that. You know what I'm saying? Somebody that's back in time, oh, man, you put the paper in front of them, they sign it with no problem. Because it's not what you see on TV. It's pretty easy. You can make a lot of money being a snitch, okay? There's guys that were on the department making six figures working with the FBI. Because, you know, we had like an FBI task force as well in the police department. You know, some of the cops work with the FBI and stuff. So they're deputized to work with them. So they had that unit. And these guys, six figures. Sometimes they make them more than the damn cops. You know, but you had to be good at what you did. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of times when these guys, we would get these guys to be informants, these drug dealers never know. They never truly know who's calling, you know, us on them or who's giving the information up. You know, and we make it to where we don't burn our CIs. You know, they're not going to court like that. You know, we make it to where it doesn't. We don't burn them. We don't burn them. And it's called burning a CI. You don't want to burn a CI because, like, why would you burn somebody that's helping you get drugs off the street? So your main priority is not to burn your CI. So it wasn't it's not hard at all. There's a lot of people signed up as CIs. You'd be surprised. You come arrest somebody, and they'll talk to you and say, "Hey, yo, I work with Hop. He's you know, we did some work together, and I'm in CI." So now you got to call him. You know what I'm saying? You got to call that officer. "Yo, listen, you working with this dude?" "Yeah, I'm working with him." "What'd you get him with?" "Oh, I got him with two packs." "Oh, nah. He's not supposed to be out here with no two packs. Go ahead and send him up. And I'll talk to him in the morning." You know, a lot of guys try to use that whole CI thing so they can sell their drugs and stuff like that. But sometimes when you call their investigator, the investigator's like, "Nah, this dude is doing too much. He's doing too much." So
got
it. Yeah, and send him up. You know, I'll take care of the rest, you know, in the morning or whatever, and not be that.
Wow, that's crazy, man. You know, it's funny you're mentioning all of this because I don't know anything about being a cop, but most people don't. So I pretty much, you know, with a lot of these detective police shows, it always shows like the people unwillingness to snitch, but they always snitch, but it's always a unwillingness. Like, you know what I mean? Like they have to catch them or they have to interrogate. Again, I know you don't like the word interrogate, but you know, they interview them like several times. The lawyer has to be there. You know, like that's always the notion behind these shows. But like to what you're saying, it's almost like most of them anyway, willingly say, "Hey, I'm available, man. Hey, cut me a deal. I know this cop's name already. We've worked together before."
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yep. Yep. That's how it's easy. It's not as hard. These guys are not all saying no to being CIs, you know, and there's cops that talk, I mean, I have to give the gab. You know, and they talk them guys into, you know, being CIs, and it's not hard. Just call me when you got something. You got it. You see a guy with a gun, call me. It's almost like being a CI. It's just you relaying information to me, and you getting paid for it. I think from what I remember, in the city was like at one point I think these guys were getting paid like $1 a pill or something like that. So if you call me and say this guy got a, you know, this guy just got a new shipment. He got 1,000 pills. This is $1,000 for you. You know, that's good money. You know, so.
Oh, wait.
What?
You said how much a pill? How much
was that?
How much? No, you said how much a pill?
$1.
How?
From what I remember, don't quote me on this. From what I remember, it was $1 a pill. And you call, you'll get $1. We count 1,000 pills, you're getting $1,000. That's what it was. So it's lucrative. You know what I'm saying? And it's not hard. You know, you see this guy, he's got a gun. Hey, John, there's a guy here with a gun on the corner of North and Pensy. I bet, what's he wearing? He's wearing blah, 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 blah. Okay. You go get the guy with the gun. You got a gun. You get the gun, you get a guy $500. $250 to $500 for that gun. For a phone call. Okay. That's it. You don't have to know the guy. You don't have to know him. You know what I'm saying? So if a street cop, if you're a new cop, right, name for yourself, this is what you do. You know, you make an arrest, you talk to people, you know, you make arrests when you can. Get a good arrest. You interview the guy with the detectives, because sometimes they don't let you do an interview unless you're with a detective, you know, or a drug detective or a regular detective. You do your interview with him, and if you can get him to sign up as a CI, you get yourself a burner phone. If he needs a phone, you can get him a phone. He'll call you. And this is as a new cop. You can do this, okay? You become a superstar in no time. Because if you get a good CI, the CI can make you into a superstar. Like, yo, how's this new guy? How's John getting all these guns? He's got a good CI. How's he getting all these drugs? He got a good CI. Wow. Before you know it, you're in a drug unit. You know? I mean, I know in a lot of states there's different time frames. You got to have a certain amount of time to get into the drug unit. But times are hard for the policing. They can't even find people that want to be cops nowadays. So there's younger and younger cops getting into the drug units. You know, it might be a little too early for them, but you know, it is what it is. They don't have the older guys don't want to do the work no more because it's too much for too little. You know, you do something wrong, they're gonna burn you up, so they don't want to deal with it.
Oh yeah, I could see that now. Are you guys dealing, I mean, at least from what you're experiencing, maybe the last 2 years, I should say, like shortages, like of police officers or cops?
Nationwide, there's shortages of police because of the climate and because of these bosses not going, you know, stepping up for the cops. Right. You know, but there's a lot of dumbass cops doing stupid shit that make the boss not step up for you. So those are the obvious ones. But for the non-obvious ones, there's a lot more non-obvious than obvious ones that they should stand up for you, and they don't. So that's why a lot of cops are upset and are leaving. A lot of cops are retiring. A lot of cops are just quitting or transferring to another police department. You know what I'm saying? And for the cops who are just quitting, that says a lot. That says a lot. Who wants to leave a job that you're getting paid over $100,000 for doing nothing? Because in the police department, if you know your job, you're not doing any work. Because it's all fun. Okay? So you made it so hard for me. Now I want to retire. When I plan on staying here until I fucking drop dead. But now you're making me want to leave because if I breathe the wrong way, you're going to fire me. Or you're going to punish me.
It's the age of social media, man. I think that's a big factor in this. Like, it is,
but it's also it's politics as well, you know. And they make it these bosses in these police departments, they make it so political is you forget where you are, bro. Like, you're not running for office. You know, you're my commissioner. You know, if I made a mistake as an officer who has all these years on and never been in trouble before, why are you not standing up for me? Why are you throwing me to the wolves? Because the news is lying and saying one thing, or what I did got blown up in the news to something that it wasn't, or more than what it is. So now you're gonna jump on a bandwagon because you can't take the heat. You know, you can't speak up. Like, you're a boss. Speak up and say no. I've seen a couple commissioners do that across the nation. They say like that guy that got shot a bunch of times. There was a police chief. I forget what state it was, and it was a video on YouTube. Black dude with dreads fighting the cops, and I think the suspect was attacking the cop or trying to kill the cop. His partner came and dumped his whole magazine into the suspect. The chief went on the news. They said, why shot him so many times? And the chief said some old slick shit. You had to make sure he was dead. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how you stick up for your guys. That's how you stick up for your guys. Yeah, make sure he was there. This guy was a super. This guy tried to kill a cop. If he's willing to kill a cop, he's willing to kill any one of you people standing in front of me with these cameras and microphones. Okay? That's just what it is. If you're not scared to kill somebody with a gun, What would he do to somebody who doesn't have a gun? You know what I'm saying?
So that's true. That's right. True.
So and so a lot of these states, same thing with Baltimore City. They don't stick up for you, man. They don't stick up for you. And of course, when I say they, it doesn't mean all of them. But you got a lot of scared people over there. Nobody wants to stick their neck out. It's just terrible. Like if you were to have an honest conversation with the cops over there now, they'll all tell you they want to leave. They all want to leave because the way they have the system now is just horrible. Nobody wants to be a supervisor no more. It's harder to be a supervisor. They make things harder than what it needs to be. Nobody uses their common sense. Double work. You being drafted because they can't get enough people to join the academy. So now the guys who are working get drafted and they're getting beaten up. Okay.
Wait. What do you mean getting drafted?
Okay. So drafting is when you're about to go home at the end of your shift, whether it was 8, 16, or 12 hours, depending on what the shift is for that department. Say you're working 12-hour shifts.
Yeah.
These suckers will come along and say, right when you're about to leave, they say, yeah, you got to stay. You can't go home. You work 12 hours, then it depends. You could have had an easy day. You could have had a hard day. But the point is that I don't want to stay, bro. I do 12 hours, I want to go home. Okay? I fulfilled my commitment. I did 12 hours. Now, they tell you when you get hired, you might have to stay. You have to work holidays and this and that. That's fine. But you draft me every day. I'm new, right? You draft me 5 days in a row. That's not even legal. Like in a contract, you can't do that. They do so many things, and don't quote me on the whole contract thing, but that's normally what it is. That's why the contract and the union is there for. The union is there so that you don't get abused by them. Okay? So you have a gripe or a grievance, you talk to the union, and the union says, yo, you can't keep drafting this kid 3 days in a row. You know, he has a life. Like, and then you want him to come in, you know, the normal time the next day. So then when he goes out in the street and he gets recorded sleeping in his patrol car, people in the street think it's funny, and they say, oh, he's not doing his job, he's lazy, he's on drugs, he's been drinking. No, he's just fucking tired. He just finished working midnight, and now he has to stay and work another. And that 4 hours means a lot, because if you live an hour away in Pennsylvania, you know, you have an hour drive home. That's 5 hours now. Even more, because you got to get undressed. You got to contend with traffic. But nobody gives a fuck. Those bosses don't give a fuck. You know what I'm saying? A real boss, a real supervisor is going to go back and say, listen, you guys are killing my squad. I had to draft my guy 3 times in a row. I'm not doing it no more. And these supervisors are scared to say that. They're all scared to talk. Not all of them. I'm not going to say all of them. But a lot of them scared to talk. Because once you open your mouth, it becomes a problem.
Yeah, that's always the case. And I think with the situation you just mentioned, like people just coming out of the academy, they don't know any better either. They don't know that they could stand up for themselves. Some of them are just learning the contract. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times, I mean, with my job, I used to, you know, work at the airport. It was nothing as intense as what you guys do. But there used to be things that the job was taking advantage of the new employees on. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know any better, you know, you're going to get taken advantage of. And that's what seems to be the case here as well.
Correct. And it's not right. You know, yeah. It's when you're a boss, I stick up for your guys, right? Because they don't really have a voice, right?
Right.
So as a supervisor, you're supposed to tell your boss, like, listen, my guys are new and they're willing to work, because a new cop is willing to work. I mean, they're like workhorses.
That's why they do it. That's why they drafted them.
Right. But then you can't, they can do it. They can work the extra 4 or 3 hours and then go home and come right back, take a shower, right? But you know for a fact as because you're the supervisor, you know more than them, and you're older. Most of the time, you're older than them, right? You're older than the new cat. You know that this takes a toll on their body. They don't know that because they're young and hot mm-hmm. and ready to go. You know what I'm saying? But you as a supervisor, you as a boss, you who runs the police department should know that you cannot abuse your new guys like that because you burn them out too quick. They get burnt out quick. They're burnt out saying they want to leave or they want to sit down or they want an easier job. You can't do that to you guys. Let them work their 12 hours and go the fuck home. Draft them one to two times out of the week or whatever the contract says, whichever's fair and right and healthy. You know what I'm saying? But now it's not healthy. And then what you're doing is you're backtracking. Now you got the health and wellness people around here saying, are you stressed, this and that? Yeah, I'm stressed. Why are you stressed? You made me stressed. So now you got people going on a health medical, okay, stress medical, people making up shit so they don't have to get drafted. You're causing an environment that doesn't need to be the way it is. You know, if you would have just do it right from the top and talk to the people from the bottom to how to make it right, the shit would get done right. But everybody's in their own little fucking space and wants to look to their own future. They're not doing it for anybody. They're doing it for themselves. With the positions they're
That's
in.
That's what I was about to say.
Right. They're always looking to further themselves, and it's never them that they it's never the people that they want to take care of. We need people in the city that's going to take care of the people in the city and not worry about you. You're mayor now, but now you want to be a congressman or whatever's higher than a mayor, whatever the next step is. So the whole time you're a mayor, you're doing all your work to be the next biggest thing. So the people behind you, the people you're working for, you don't give a shit about. You don't care. Like, bro, if I was mayor, I want you motherfuckers to have my damn statue in the middle of the square. You know why? Because I did the right thing. And I was the best guy for the job, and I made shit right. I gave you good schools. I took the money from the lotto and the casinos, and I made at least one good school in Baltimore. And then went on to the next school in Baltimore. But it's all bullshit, bro.
But you know, those people never last, though, Junior. You never hear of those people. And the people you do hear go that route, which is very few, they you know what happens to them.
I do. And that's another thing. It's like, you know, you get picked to be put into these places, into these positions. They pick you. Yeah. You don't win these positions. You're picked. They groom you to be and to get into that position, you have to make promises. Promises you have to keep. You don't keep them. No matter what. Consequences. Right. No matter what, you got to keep this promise. Okay. And that's what sucks about this whole city thing, man. It's like you need to get somebody in there that's independent. What do? They come up with a charge. He did this 5 years ago. He didn't pay his tax. No, man, even longer than that. 10 years ago, when he was 16 years old, he didn't pay his taxes when he worked at McDonald's. He shouldn't be mayor anymore. He shouldn't be the congressman. He shouldn't be the police commissioner. This is the shit they do. When you want to help the people, they'll come up with the bullshit, man. They're in high school the wrong way. So, what? Like, where'd she come from?
That's how it goes, bro.
And it sounds like I'm rambling. Much and so little time to talk. What's going on, especially just with Baltimore City itself? You know what I'm saying? Just with Baltimore City itself. There's so many ways they can fix this damn city, man. There's so many ways they can fix it, but there's so much bullshit. You know that politics that just and everybody says that they say it out in politics. It doesn't have to be politics. Just fix a fucking school. Just fix at a time. Don't spread out a million schools. That's a dollar a school. What you gonna fix with a fucking dollar?
But okay, so hold on to that thought. So I'm gonna play devil's advocate with what you just said, because this is what some people that are not familiar with those areas, like me and you were around growing up, would say. Well, they live in poverty. They choose to live that way, right? They say these lies, and they say, you know, well, we do spend money on those communities, but they don't manage their money right. So to that, you would say what?
First of all, you're not giving the money to the community. You're not putting it in their hands. You're giving it to the person who runs the fund, right? Right. So whoever's in that community, whatever community you pick, okay, you throw the money at it. You got to have people watching the money because people steal. No matter, even if there's 1,000 cameras, there's going to be one dummy that wants to steal the money, right? You got to have people watching money who watch the money, okay? So it's not that hard. It's not, because they just make things hard. They made things so hard that they say everything is hard, and it's not.
So people, they got to say it's hard because they got to have it programmed. They got to have it programmed in our brains to say that it's hard. Because if we think it's hard and it's impossible, then depression and everything builds and self-hate builds. And when that happens, then, you know, crime happens. And when crime happens, then, you know, that's when there's a whole dysfunctional cycle that just keeps repeating itself.
Mm-hmm. School, people don't want to be poor, okay? I don't care what you say. I worked in the streets for a long time, and I've talked to drug addicts. I've talked to people who I've arrested. I've talked to people who I didn't arrest. I've talked to people who had drugs in them that I didn't arrest. Okay? I've had conversations with people. I've treated people like humans. Okay? And I've asked them, what happened? Okay? I've asked them what happened. Either they say their parents were like this. Okay? Yeah. Or they'll say, you know, a lot of the older people, we'll say the neighbors were beautiful back in the day, you know, and I forget what they tell me, why it just went downhill, but it's all education, right? With the kids now in these neighborhoods, if you were to give them proper education and a fair chance, of course it's not 100%, nothing's 100%, but if you go neighborhood by neighborhood and try to do it that way, stop veering off all the damn time, or just even go block by block. You got to have special schools in Baltimore because of the situation, okay? You got to have a count of all the kids in Baltimore. You got to go into these projects and get a count of all these kids in the projects, okay? I'm talking about interview. Like, it's going to be hard. Like, interview all these people in the project, interview all of them. Find out what all those kids are doing. Sometimes these kids are hungry as fuck because their parents are crackheads, okay, or heroin addicts, and now the young boy has to go outside and sell drugs so he can feed his little brother and sister. And that's why you have to talk to these kids sometimes when you arrest them to find out what's going on at home. It can't just be you just arresting them over and over and over again. That's bullshit. You can't do that. And I learned that quick. You can't just keep arresting people over and over again. You got to talk to them and see what's going on. You got to visit their house. Like, you got to go extra when you're a cop. You know what I'm saying? Because the job is not just arresting people. That's not your fucking job. Is just to arrest people. You got to talk to the people in the neighborhood that you're working and find out what's going on and see if you can fix it. I always had my phone, to this day, has all the numbers for help in my phone, because I made sure when I was in the street, I was able to help whoever I came across that needed help. I had a phone number for them. Okay? You need help? Your boyfriend abused you? Hey, I have the number for that. Or I can drive you over there right now. Pito, when I was there, I didn't give a fuck. I did what I wanted to do, and anybody can tell you that when I was there, okay? If I needed to drive somebody somewhere to get some help, I'm driving them there. I've saved many people from committing suicide, just so many people, okay? And to this day, I still, whenever I'm in the city and I see that dude or anybody else, they'll say, hey, what's up? You remember me, bro? Yeah, I remember you, motherfucker. Of course I remember you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you saved me. My mom died. I was going to kill myself. I was on drugs. What'd I do? I didn't just blow him off. Dude came to my car and said, yo, I want to kill myself. I'm going to hurt myself. Nah, bro, why you want to do that? Why? What happened? My mom died. His mom was his only caretaker. I'm talking about, this dude was big, okay? So now, I like to help people, but I still have to be safe. This dude was about six something. Bigger than me, okay? If he wanted to overtake me and take my gun, he can do it.
Wow.
It won't be easy, you know what I'm saying? But he could have done it, you know what I'm saying? And then when you're dealing with people like this, I'm sorry to, you know, veer off the topic, you know what I'm saying? But sometimes it just comes to me, so I got to tell you. So no, this cool. is this is me by myself, because we drive around by ourselves, right? And I was in patrol at this time. Came across, it was a dark street, because all the streets in Baltimore are dark, and there's no damn lights anywhere, right? So I see him, and I'm like, you know, and I'm on the lookout for criminals as well, right? So I stop him, thinking maybe, you know, I got something, you know, because he's walking around the neighborhood's dog, and he looks, you know, just weary and shit, right? So I stop, and I pull him, I'm like, yo, you, I was like, you all right, you good? Because that's what I always used to ask people, are you good? And from their reaction, you know how to go forward. Say, yo, man, you good? So he comes to the car, and he puts his hands on the, I put the window down all the way, and he puts his hand on the door. So I know he doesn't have a weapon right now, you know, and I'm safe because he has both his hands on the window, on the door. So I'm like, what's up? He's like, man, I feel like hurting myself right now. I'm like, are you serious? So first thing I do is I tell dispatch where I'm at, okay? So I tell him where I'm at, and I said, what happened? What's wrong? What's the matter? So at that point right there, I'm showing him that I care, okay? And I'm putting my guard down for the most part. So now, if he was planning on hurting me, he might have second thoughts on it now, because now I'm paying him attention. And sometimes that's all people need, is for you to pay him attention, okay? So he says, my mom just died, and he said, I don't have nobody. I have nobody in this world now. He's like, she was the only one. I'm trying to kick this drug habit. My mental's not right. And he was just at the hospital, and the hospital offered him no fucking help. So what the hospital used to do was they used to bring the guys in. If they go in there for help, they go in there for help, and then they kick them right out. So there was no long-term treatment. Okay, and I'm not bashing the hospital, because, you know, they have their protocols and their things.
Yeah,
they
do, yeah,
I don't know anything about, you know what I'm saying? So I'm not bashing them at all. They're great people at the hospital, right? So he told me what his issue was with the health system, mental health system in Baltimore, right? So he was, from his perspective, he was telling me that he go there and he get no help. They'll give him medicine for 1 to 2 days, and then they kick him out, you know, because I guess they don't have the room, whatever it may be. So I said, all right, man. So I said, how can I help you? Like, what do you need? You want me to take you to the hospital now? I can take you to the hospital now if you want me to. It's no big deal for me. He said, yo, I would appreciate that, you know. And remember, he said that he felt like hurting himself. So I'm, you know, I'm still concerned, like, damn. You know, and the smart thing to do is, when you're going to give somebody a ride, okay, is to at least pat them down, okay? So what I did was, I didn't want to, and this is, some cops might say, yeah, I was stupid of you, or, you know, naive of you, or whatever. But what I did was, I had him step back, and I had him lift his shirt, turn around. I had him, you know, take his pockets and squish his pockets. You know, you can see when somebody squishes their pockets, and they mean to squish it.
Yeah.
It was just to do a quick, instead of me getting out, doing a quick pat down on him, I made him do it himself, made him turn around, lift his shirt up, blah, 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 blah. So he didn't have any weapons on him, right? So I sat him, I don't know if I sat him in the front or the back, right? So as I was driving, I'm still talking to him, and I'm still wary, like, I had to be careful, because, you know, he could just jump up on me and choke me out or whatever it may be. You know, I could still be attacked with his hands. So, you know, I drive him to the hospital, and I tell dispatch that I have one in the car, and I'm driving to the hospital, give him a mileage and all that stuff, right? Just in case something does happen, and I can press the radio and say, or press the alert tone, and everybody knows where the hell I'm at. So I take him to the hospital, and I talk to the nursing staff, and I tell them what happened and what was said, and they said they'll take care of it, right? So he went in there. I said goodbye to him. I gave him my name because he asked for it, and then I got his name, and I said, all right, man, I'll see you, man. Good luck, all right? Hope you feel better. Sorry about your mom's. He said, thank you. I appreciate it. And then weeks later, I saw him on Cary and Pennsylvania. And I kind of barely recognized. The only reason why I recognized him, because he was just a face in the crowd at that point. He reminded me, he's like, oh, you remember me? And usually when people say that, it's a quick thing. Like, yeah, I do remember you. And so he said that to me, and I remembered. It clicked. And I said, yo, how you doing, man? He's like, yo. He's like, I'm good. He puts his hands up and says, I'm good now. Thanks to you, man. I got a job and everything. And, you know, that conversation we had, and you taking me to the hospital, you know, that helped. You know, I'm not on drugs, nothing. He's like, yo, bro. I gave him a hug, man. I was like, yo. I said, that's what's up, man. I'm happy for him. I'm proud of you, bro. And that was it. And I've seen a couple times after that, and we said hello to each other, and that was that, yo. Like, and that's the compassion you got to have for people when you're patrolling in the street. That one person, he will always remember me, and I always remember him. You know what I'm saying? That's what makes police work fun. You know what I'm saying? And
that goes a long. That goes a long way, man.
It does. It doesn't matter how many people you arrested, but see that, and that's what command also would have you thinking. You know what I'm saying? You get praise for all the arrests you make. You never really get a praise for doing that. I didn't get praise for that, for helping that dude. You know why? Because I didn't tell nobody to help that dude. That was a mine and his thing. You know what I'm saying? But sometimes they do letters of recognition and stuff like that. It's whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you get a recognition for the most guns.
You know, you might get a life saving award, but the majority of cops that save lives, they don't get it. A lot of times you see somebody getting like, yo, how you gonna get this fucking guy? Like, get five motherfuckers yesterday. He saved one motherfucker today and it was bullshit. And he gets the award. Like, those are the things that us cops laugh and joke about a lot of times. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
It's always the wrong guy getting the damn
prize. But it's not even just police work. It's always in a lot of things. They just always the wrong guy getting awards.
Yeah, so you know, police work is a lot, but they don't teach them that's what it's about. You know, they just don't. You know, it's crime, crime, crime. That's all it's about. But it can be fixed, Pete. Though, it can be fixed, or it can be tamed. You know, it's just they're not willing to put the work into it. But then they'll come with all these different programs, bro. All these different programs. And they'll go all around the issue with all these fucking programs and put millions of dollars into these programs. Fuck the program. Go to this neighborhood and fix this neighborhood. Fix the school. The kids go to the same bullshit school year after year, decade after decade.
And not learning anything.
They're not learning shit.
They're not learning anything, man.
They're not learning shit. Fix the fucking school. That school, and then the kids that are in this school are not allowed in that school because they're too... So now this whole school of 200 kids. Yeah, no.
All they're doing, all you see in those neighborhoods, and not to drift off completely, but they build basketball courts, they build football fields. That's it. They don't build, nobody says, you know what, let's build banks, let's have classes where you could learn to be entrepreneurs, learn how to manage your money.
No financials. They don't teach you no financial anything.
No financials.
Black schools, you don't get that. There's no such thing. You put your money in the bank, and that's where it stays. They never teach you anything about financials in school.
And there's a reason for that. That's by design. That's not coincidence. That's by design. That is no coincidence. Like, you can't explain to me how there's gyms and YMCAs and basketball courts all over the place, but there's never an institution for, hey, let's learn how to, let's open our own banks in the neighborhood, let's open our own private banks, let's open our own private financial institutions. No, there's none of that, especially in those neighborhoods that never happened. So now you have kids that they lean them into towards sports or entertainment, and it's like, you know, okay, that's nice, but that's a very unrealistic expectation of them. You need to put them in a direction where the expectations are more realistic, and they have a chance to be successful of them. Like, it's very realistic that you could be a successful businessman and manage your money. That's more realistic than being the next LeBron James.
Way more realistic, because that's one in a million.
Yeah,
being a LeBron James. It's just, you know, these kids have no idea that there's so many different jobs out here that you can make a lot of money from. Like, society would just tell you it's either sports, movies, or you're working at McDonald's.
All right, guys, thank you for tuning in for this episode. This is part two of our interview with Junie. Hope you enjoyed like some of his cop stories of his upbringing, how he came up. It was really interesting to know We want to educate our audience from various perspective of people's lives. So I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be on next week with Junie as well and more of our co-hosts. Wow. We talk about the existence of aliens. Are they real? Do they exist? So it's very good next week. Hope you guys stay tuned. Again, subscribe to on Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. Get the please view, share, subscribe, guys, because we're trying to do we're making an impact here. So if you want to be a part of history, just hit that subscribe button. Appreciate you guys. Thank you.